I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome once again to the Ed Springsteen Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com. And speaking of which, when you go to LouisvillePolitics.com, please join our RSS feed and join our email mailing list, and we'll keep you up to date on everything that's important to you. For you new guys tonight, phone number is 858-683-1326, or you can reach us at area code 502-805-0334. As always, you guys that are listening in the queue, and we always have a bunch, remember to hit that number one on your dial pad if you want to be heard on air. Everybody else can join us in the live chat right here at BTR, or you can join me in an IM chat at AOL at My View Matters. I tell you, folks, you know, there's stupid news and there's stupid news. Here's some stupid news for you. I got two great stories for you. A woman, this is how bad it is at Walmart now. We've got here in Louisville, we've got renegade constables that like to shoot unarmed civilians at Walmart parking lots. I don't know if you guys knew about that or not. But in Georgia, apparently, you know, pregnant teenagers have to have parking spaces saved for them. So there's a Georgia teenager, a male, was trying to save a parking space in a public parking lot, Walmart, trying to save a parking space for a pregnant friend who was driving around a lot looking for a space so she wouldn't need to walk too far to the store. But a woman driving an SUV arrived and wanted to pull into the spot, and he tried to stop her. Well, she rammed a teenager out of the spot with her car. Of course, she was arrested and everything. She's taken to jail. I've really got no problem with her being arrested, you know. But it does prove, once again, what we've been talking about for a couple of weeks now. Anything can be a weapon, right? We've been on this great gun control kick. Well, now we've got a woman behind the wheel of a vehicle who had the intent to hurt somebody, so she ran into this guy because she wanted a parking space. Guess what? Here's another dangerous weapon. It just reinforces my belief that we've got to ban all cars. That's just the way it is. And the second story today you guys, I think, will really love. Happy New Year to each and every one of you. Thank your federal government. Yes, your federal government. Beginning today, for those of you who still use 75-watt incandescent light bulbs, they have been banned from production and importation in the United States. The stores are allowed to sell out of the 75-watt incandescent light bulbs that they have in stock now. But once those are gone, they're gone. We'll never get any more of it. According to the federal government, they have to regulate our light bulbs now to make sure that, you know, we're getting this green energy. Of course, we know how well that has worked so far. You know, but the statement by Consumer Reports says that 90% of the energy the bulb uses is wasted anyway. So they're being replaced with bulbs that are actually much more energy efficient bulbs. They burn just as bright, just as good, and they will actually, here's the key phrase for me, they will actually save you money over the long run. Now that over the long run is a great key phrase for me, because obviously these new light bulbs are quite a bit more expensive than the incandescent light bulbs that most of us have become accustomed to. So you're going to have to put up more money up front, and supposedly they last longer. Well, I will tell you right now, I use a couple of incandescent bulbs in my house. It's my primary bulb. But these new bulbs that they're using now, these fluorescent light bulbs, these CFLs, aren't worth the money we spend for them. Do they last a little longer? Maybe about 1.5 to 2 times as long, but they cost 3 to 4 times as much. So you tell me what the deal is here. And oh, by the way, under current federal law, the 60-watt bulbs and the 40-watt bulbs are going to be gone next year. So January 1st of next year, we'll actually lose the 40 and the 60-watt bulbs, and we're not going to have any choice but to use these so-called green bulbs that government says is so much better for us, so much better for us. And as our good friend Stoppin is pointing out in the chat room, the old light bulbs are 100% recyclable. Yes, they are, Paul. I agree. They are. The new ones, what are they going to do with those? I totally agree with you there. So those are your two bonehead stories of the day. And, you know, how do you take America over? By making silly-ass laws like that, and people just let everything slide through. We give that government so much control over our daily lives, something as simple as a light bulb, so that they can act like they're superior to anybody, so that they can pad the pockets of their crony friends. You know, we're sitting here feeding it willingly. You know, I don't know why I don't just write a letter to President Obama and say, Mr. President, will you and your Democrats in Congress and the liberals around this country, will you please come and take my home, take my yard, take my dogs, take my kids, take the clothes off of my back, please. Just come and take it all right now. I'm one of those guys. I don't want to be nickel dimed to death where you're going to take from me every day until I'm just so daggone depressed or angry. There's nothing going to be done. Just take it all at one time so that I can deal with it and move on. You know, that's the whole thing, folks. We're getting to the point where it's ridiculously silly, and we're still allowing it to happen. The fiscal cliff is a great example of that. All right, but there is good news. And before I get into the good news, though, our good friend Paul, yeah, Paul, stop it. You're absolutely right. You know, the replacement bulbs contain mercury. You know, we can't get rid of the mercury. Mercury is dangerous as hell. So we've got dangerous amounts of mercury in these replacement bulbs that are getting rid of these incandescent lights for it. You know, but they're not going to ban the mercury, are they? Mercury kills you, people. Mercury will flat out kill you quickly. But they don't care about that. Let's go ahead and put that in the households. Let's bust one of those things. Let one of these two-year-olds walk around, hit a table lamp, knock it on the floor, and get covered with the mercury, get through the glass before his parents can get to him and see what happens then. Oh, my goodness. Now we're going to have to do something for the kids. We're going to ban end tables and table lamps. That's what we'll do for the kids. We're not going to actually address the problem that mercury in these balls kills people. Wow, this is early. Let's go straight to the phones. Mr. Mayo, how are you, sir?
Doing good. How about yourself, Mr.
Man, I can't complain. Yeah. You know, Dale the Truth, and I probably should have announced this earlier, folks. I apologize. Dale the Truth is off tonight. He's got a meeting that he is heading up. He's really actively involved in the Freedom Movement and the Liberty Movement, and they've got a Liberty meeting tonight with a new group that was formed, and they asked Dale to be the keynote speaker for the very first meeting, so he's tied up with that. So I apologize for not putting that out there earlier. Go ahead, Mayo. I am so sorry for interrupting you.
No problem. I was going to say with the because I actually just looked up some info for work, our condo association, LED versus TFL versus the incandescent. LED over the life of the bulb, you're going to save, if I remember the numbers right, $271.65. CFL is like $62, but as I think you said, Paul in the chat room pointed out, some mercury. Mm-hmm. And what most people don't realize, you break one of those things, if you read the fine print and the little book that comes with it, you're mm-hmm. supposed to leave your residence for 24 hours on the CFL bulbs.
Oh, yeah, nobody's supposed to be handling mercury at all. Yeah, that's the substance. I mean, you know, that's one of those dangerous toxic substances that you got to call a chemical unit to come out, where they put their little handy-dandy suit on and grab one of your daggone Bounty towels and wipe it up with that. Oh, you're right. Go ahead.
And what I was going to say, the other thing, there was, I just finished reading, I can't remember, five different cities, I want to say like Seattle and something else, but they switched over and they thought they'd match costs on their streetlights instead of running the sodium vapor or the halogens,
right?
Because the sodium vapor and halogens use like 275 watts, Well, the same Cobra head attachment with the LEDs only use like 125 watts. Plus, even if half of the lights die in it, it's still brighter or as bright and, you know, lasts, you know, how many ever hundreds of thousands of hours longer versus the sodium. So they did one part of the city, and then they got to seeing the money they were saving, and they thought it was going to be 7 years. And actually, with the savings on the energy, it was like 2.5-3 years. So they went ahead and started replacing all the other lights. Now, if my tax dollars were to go for LED bulbs for all these street lights I'm looking at burning right here using 275 watts each, yeah, go for it. You know, but the CFLs, it's like they were rushed out or pushed down our throats, like you were saying. And half the time, you know, like I think you said, one of the chat room people said, you know, they're the old incandescents were 100% recyclable. The CFLs mm-hmm. are not. I mean, you have to drop them into the little, you know, take them to, you know, your local big box store and drop them off at a special recycling thing.
Oh, yeah. You know, and that's exactly it. You know, we're making everything so much harder, so much more expensive. I mean, you know, there's another thing people aren't really paying attention to either. These new bulbs, the CFLs and the LEDs, you know, they hum. So now you're adding noise to your house. You're trying to watch a TV show or something. Like me, I'm up real late at night. I'm practically up 24 hours a day. My wife's in bed. She goes to work. She's up 3:30 in the morning every morning for work. So, you know, when I'm out watching, you know, if I decide I'm going to watch TV for a little while or something late night, which is the only time I really get to watch TV, you know, I've got to keep the volume down. So now I'm going to have this constant humming in my ear that's going to piss me off because I can't hear my TV because of the humming. And the light itself, I don't know if you've ever noticed or not, but the light itself, when you compare the incandescent bulbs to the CFLs and the LEDs, it's two different types of light. You know, the lights that are coming out, CFLs and LEDs, those are cold-looking lights to me. They don't do nearly as good a job. Would you agree?
Well, they've now, within the last year and a half, they have, because the first CFLs and LEDs that came out, they reminded me of what I call, like, doctor lights, you know, the real bright, cold, kind of harsh, bright light.
Right.
And, well, now they've come out with, I don't know if it's a frequency of the light for the LEDs or a cover, but they actually have what they call a warm light, which matches the incandescents.
Supposedly matches the incandescent.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just as a side note on the good thing about LEDs, especially if you use them for outdoor lights like on your porch, mm-hmm. they don't put out the UV frequency like the CFLs and the incandescents do, so they don't attract bugs. So I mean, there's a plus there, especially in the summertime.
Yeah, you know, I'm gonna save $3 on bug killer, you know, once a year, and I'm gonna spend $50 more for the light bulb so I don't get the bug. That's exactly it. There's all kinds of different ways to look at this. And, you know, the bottom line is the benefits of the incandescent bulb, when you look at cost effectiveness, when you look at recyclability and health consciousness, you know, when you look at the quality of light and everything else, I mean, the incandescent bulb clearly outshines, if you will, the competition in the CFLs and the LEDs. This is nothing more than a liberal agenda to pretend like they're doing something to green up the place. Because you can't claim that switching to these CFLs is going to be great for the environment and green because of the daggone hazardous mercury involved in the process. So, you know, it's tomato, tomato. They want to lie on one hand, you know, and then they want to BS us on the other. It's the same damn thing. And the American people let them slide this crap in. This wasn't voted on as standalone legislation, which kind of brings me to a point I've been wanting to make for a long time and I continue wanting to make. We have got to force these people to do this standalone legislation. Crap like this gets added on to spending bills. Junk like this gets added on to agriculture bills. These don't get put out there as anything mainstream. I mean, you've got to really pay attention to what's going on, and you've got to watch. You've got to watch and read the fine print on these asinine, book-thick bills that this Congress votes on repeatedly that they don't know is in there. And that's the problem, people. And our good friend Stop It is just posted some links in the chat room for you guys in the chat. If you guys are listening, jump in the chat if you'd like them. But he had posed the question to me, have I ever seen what had happened when a CFL bulb breaks while it's turned on? And I answered back and said, no, I honestly hadn't. I'd never bothered to look it up. Well, he's found 3 YouTube videos, and he's posted them in the chat room for you guys to look at. And I'll be honest with you, you probably want to do that. Because, you know, the second and third videos, according to Paul, are actual videos that are showing fires that were caused by the CFL bulbs that were being forced to buy at a higher price for no gain and hazardous duty. We all ought to get hazardous duty pay at our job because we've got to be around these things because of the mercury content. But, you know, we've got to look at all of this. So look at these videos because that could be pretty interesting. You know, and there is a feel-good story out there, folks. With all the stuff going on with the fiscal cliff, you know, the enormous debt, the House, the Senate, you know, lying about everything as always because there's no such thing as the fiscal cliff. We weren't in any danger of anything. It was all a big gimmick by the liberals because the Democrats have some power right now, and they wanted to exercise it and force new taxes. That's all that was. Instead of controlling spending, instead of, you know, getting rid of spending that we don't need, unnecessary spending, they wanted to raise taxes. So they got what they wanted. They lied to the American people, and we'll get into that in a minute. But here's a feel-good story that's kind of personal to me, because I worked at Ford Motor Company for a few years. I left Ford Motor Company at the beginning of 2007, right after I'd run through the mayoral election in 2006, and decided to go in the direction we're at today, which led to MVM Media, Louisville Politics, all that stuff. But Ford was the only one of the automakers who did not take the bailout. As we all know, Government Motors, or General Motors to some people still, took a buyout. Chrysler took a buyout, or took the bailouts, I should say, costing the taxpayer billions of dollars. They've never paid back a dime of the money. You know, a few months ago, the government was bragging about how GM had paid back their bailout funds, which was a lie, as we found out later. All they did was get bailout funds from another account and pay out the first bailout funds that they got, so they were still using the same damn money. But it was the old bait and switch we've become accustomed to. The one of the automakers that did not take the bailout was Ford Motor Company. Ford Motor Company went into major debt, folks. Ford Motor Company borrowed, I believe it was somewhere around $30 billion. They ran $30 billion is what Ford Motor Company borrowed. They put the Blue Oval itself up as collateral. And everybody said Ford's going to take all the bailout money because they have to because of their debt. No, Ford took that debt and they restructured their business. They downsized. They had buyouts. You know, I was one of those people who left on the buyout program and all these different things. But Ford didn't take a dime of taxpayer money, and everybody said Ford was dead going into all of this. Well, I'll tell you what, Ford, for the second year in a row, sold over 2 million vehicles in the U.S. for the second year in a row. They topped 2 million for sales in the U.S. for 2012. And we don't even have the final totals in yet, but we know they've topped that. All right. Their November numbers were up 5.4% from last year. Okay. So when we look at all of this, and to give you some idea what a milestone this is, you know, Chevy is a GM product, and then you've got Toyota. You know, but Ford is the only auto brand to eclipse this 2 million vehicle sale on the U.S. mark since 2007. And they've done it 2 years in a row. Chevy, 1.6 million. Toyota, 1.6 million. There's about 10,000 difference between the two of them. So when we look at all of this, when we look at all of this and you look at branding, that's remarkable. And they did it without your money. They did it without the taxpayer bailout money. They got themselves into the mess that everybody was in. And they put their butts on the line to get themselves out of the mess that they themselves had created. Now, from my perspective, I call that personal responsibility. In this particular case, the corporate personal responsibility. They've done their jobs. They've done their jobs. So why is it that the president is acting like GM has been such a success? After announcing just last week that he would be selling off the remaining shares that the U.S. owns from General Motors because GM is having a problem with their stock prices because people don't want to buy their stock if the government's involved in ownership. So he wants to go ahead and sell our stock at about half the value or less than what we actually purchased it at, and we're going to take a drop. We're going to lose roughly, depending on which source you listen to, between $14 and $18 billion. That's your taxpayer money at work, folks. That's your taxpayer money at work. We gave General Motors money that they never paid back, and now we're going to let them get off with half of the damn value. That comes out of our pocket. Ford Motor Company is a private auto manufacturer, and they survived because they took responsibility. Now, you tell me who you would rather do business with, because I think the American public has just proven that. for Ford to go over the 2 million auto sales mark for 2 years running, and nobody has attained that since 2007, especially in these recessionary times, because we are still in a recession. Don't kid yourself. For Ford to be able to do that tells me that the American public, this is their way of saying thank you. Thank you, Ford, for not screwing us and taking our taxpayer money that we worked so hard to make, and for taking it upon yourselves to not only take on your own debt to restructure, but you also got the message from the American public, and you put out a better quality product. So now you've got a quality product, you've got American made, if you will, because they didn't take any taxpayer money. Ford is a success story. What's the difference between Ford and the other auto manufacturers like GM and Chrysler? We can't say it's a union problem because those are unionized. That's why I left Toyota out of that equation. Those companies are all unionized. So we can't sit here and blame the UAW for GM and Chrysler. Ford still has the UAW, and they're doing quite well. You know, they took a lot of things away. The UAW negotiated in good faith with Ford and gave up a few things. Now, there's going to be a fight in that in the next contract. But Ford survived with the union, the same union that represents their competition, and are thriving. They are thriving. They're going to have some serious profits this year. And I'll be honest with you, those profits may exceed the record profits that they had roughly 10 or 11 years ago. And they did it without your taxpayer money. And I continue saying your taxpayer money because one of the biggest stories we've been talking about the last couple of days, obviously, is this whole lie and myth about the so-called fiscal cliff. As soon as the House voted this in late last night, Barack Obama went straight to the White House briefing room and declared that thanks to the votes of Republicans and Democrats in Congress, I will sign a law that raises taxes on the wealthiest 2% of Americans while preventing tax hikes that could have sent the economy back into recession. Now think about that statement. While preventing the tax hikes that could have sent the economy back into recession. What a joke. Literally every American in this country just got a tax hike. Just got a tax hike. One of the best ways to point that out for people who think they know everything is over the last 2 years, we've had a 2% temporary cut in the Social Security payroll tax. Neither Democrats or Republicans or President Obama felt it was important to extend that temporary cut. So no matter what happens, 2% of your pay is now going into Social Security that you've come to rely on over the last 2 years. You are now giving up one full week's pay and new taxes. And new taxes. You're going to give up one full week's pay to the United States government for Social Security. Now think about it. You think I'm lying about that? It's simple math, folks. There's 52 weeks in a year. Assume everybody gets at least a two-week vacation. You got 50 weeks left. 50 times 2% is 100%. One full week of your salary will now go to Social Security. Enjoy vacation next year. Think about that. You know, we look at this. The Republicans, of course, are trying to act like they did a lot to minimize the tax increases because Barack Obama wanted $1.6 billion. He only ended up with about $1.6 trillion. He only ended up with roughly $620 billion, so they did a great job. Of course, this is a bait and switch, too. But since when did conservatives in this country decide to raise taxes and not have any spending cuts? The majority Republicans passed this budget deal, and it's not a real budget. It's a 2-month budget. We'll get into that in a second. But the majority of the so-called conservative Republicans who believe supposedly in less taxes and less government just raised your taxes and at the same time grew government. That is alarming. That is alarming. You know, we've got Representative Bill Pascrell. He's a Democrat out of New Jersey. The American people are the real winners tonight, not anyone who navigates these halls. I want to find out how I won tonight. I want to find out how I won last night, I should say. Because according to my records, everybody's taxes went up. How did anybody win here? I don't see it. Now, there were winners here. Wall Street won. Wall Street got a major giveaway given to them. They won a 20% rate on dividends above $400,000. And if they wouldn't have added this to this spending bill, if you will, that rate was actually going to raise back up to where it was during Clinton. The Clinton era rate was 39.6%. And so they got a 20% reprieve. They made out like bandits. And that doesn't include the additional 3.8% that's going to be implemented to pay for Obamacare. And nobody's paying attention to that tax hike either. Where was your mainstream media in all of this, folks? Where was the reporting on all of this? You don't see it. 77.1% of all U.S. households just got a tax increase. The people that Barack Obama wanted to save below $400,000, originally $250,000, but he let it go to $400,000 to protect Congress, and I'll explain that too. More than 80% of all households with incomes between $50,000 and $200,000 will now pay higher taxes. The average increase is going to be somewhere around $1,600. So some will pay higher, some will pay lower, but it's a new tax. It's a new tax. The payroll tax cut, gone. That means 100% of all workers are now paying new taxes. Wall Street made out. Where's ours? Where's ours? See, I don't get that. I don't get that. And nobody is telling me anything. Nobody wants to talk about this. Now, I'll tell you something here. There's a lot of people out there right now. John Boehner right now just got the worst news of his life. They've actually done a new report and already done some polling. All right? And John Boehner, he's got to be mortified with everything that's coming back. He is hated by more than a 6-to-1 margin, more than any other person in Congress, for the way he handled this. Everybody, literally everybody, blames John Boehner. He's responsible for this across-the-board tax increase. He's responsible. Everybody blames him. And what's fascinating, and Paul, I thank you, that, by the way, for bringing this up, because I was actually just looking up that number. What's interesting here is we also had Democrats that voted against this. For other reasons, I'm sure. The Democrats didn't like the fact that they didn't get $1.6 trillion, and they thought Obama sold out too cheap. The Republicans are angry because we gave up $620 billion, and we didn't get one damn thing in return. So there were haters on both sides, but for different reasons. But the reality is this. This uniparty that we used to believe was a two-party system, one was for smaller government, the other one was for bigger government. This uniparty is alive and well. I don't see how anybody can sit here today and say that the uniparty does not exist. Anybody that was surprised by the vote last night is living in some fantasy land, or they're living overseas in the Middle East somewhere and getting a paper that's 50 years old because they're not aware of what happened last night. The Republicans in this country clearly have no backbone. Clearly have no backbone. Now, we have been arguing against Barack Obama for quite some time. I have been arguing against the liberal left for quite some time. All right. And I even brought Mitt Romney up to task, too, folks. So don't think it's always been a one-sided street. It hasn't. But right now, today, I think it was never more clear that the Republicans have simply lost what their conservative party is supposed to be about. Now, everybody wants to sit here and talk about how strong the Tea Party is. The Tea Party's there to save us, boy. They're not going to let him get away with this crap. I call bullshit. It's BS. And I tell you why. Your Tea Party conservatives, Senator Pat Toomey, a Republican out of Pennsylvania, Tea Party conservative Ron Johnson, Republican out of Wisconsin, they voted yes for this garbage. They voted yes to raise your taxes and not hold government accountable to anything less in spending. They voted to raise your taxes. This is the Tea Party contingent, folks. Now, I'll tell you who's got bigger balls than all of them. And this is a guy that everybody likes to ridicule, rag on, and act like they despise because he's outspoken and he believes in liberty and freedom. And he does a good job living up to what he believes. And that's Senator Rand Paul right here in Kentucky. I am proud to call him my senator. Mitch McConnell is a joke. He's the one that sent this garbage forward to the House. Senator Rand Paul voted against it in the Senate. And his statement was simple. While I appreciate my colleagues' efforts to protect taxpayers, I don't think the deal we reached tonight went far enough in achieving that. The combination of raising taxes and increasing spending is not in Americans' best interest, and I could not in good faith support this legislation. And he's absolutely right. Yeah, you know, you're going to get this, folks. There are no spending cuts in this. They're going to grow government. We haven't even reflected the 3.8% tax increase to fund Obamacare, as I've mentioned repeatedly. That's going to also grow government. Okay? And the Republicans didn't stand up. Your Tea Party contingent didn't stand up. Who else is pissed about this? Everybody should be. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. I'm going to get a little drink for the cause to kind of get this throat mellowed out. You're listening to the Ed Springer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. And, you know, I really want to hear who else thinks that this was a great idea and the Republicans actually care about you today any more than the Democrats do. We'll be right back.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springer of the My View Matters Radio Show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
we are back. My apologies, folks. I tell you what, you know, this Kentucky weather is something else. I got to tell you, I've been dealing with this for since before Thanksgiving. So I apologize. It got cold. Throat went nuts again today. Welcome to the real world. Not your problem, I know, but what the heck, I'm in a mood to share. So anyway, we're looking at this whole situation. John Boehner is now hated by, you know, on a 6-1 margin from everybody. And what's really even funnier, is Boehner is either so arrogant or so stupid. I have yet to decide which one, I admit. But he's either arrogant or stupid. But he could not be bothered. Could not be bothered last night to vote on the relief bill for Hurricane Sandy. Now, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, we all know, is very outspoken. And he lit into John Boehner something serious today. You know, and he flat out said there's only one group to blame for the continued suffering of these innocent victims. The House majority and their speaker, John Boehner. This is not a Republican or Democratic issue. Natural disasters happen in red states and blue states and states with Democratic governors and Republican governors. We respond to innocent victims of natural disasters as Americans, or at least we did until last night. Last night, politics were placed before oaths to serve our citizens. It was disappointing and disgusting to watch. That's Chris Christie on his Republican leadership in the House. You know, you got to love it. I do. How in the hell can John Boehner sit here? How long ago did Sandy happen? 66 days ago? And the House has failed miserably. And probably the easiest test they will ever have as far as their commitment to public service. They have not passed any disaster relief bill. And to tell you how bad the House is, the Senate has already approved a $60.4 billion aid package for New York and New Jersey for the damage from Hurricane Sandy. But the House Appropriations Committee has only approved a $27 billion measure, and they haven't even voted on it yet. Now, I'm kind of curious to see why there's almost a $35 billion difference between the two plans. And I'm sure we'll find that out soon enough. But how can the Republicans and John Boehner simply say that that's okay? Simply say that that's okay. They can't. You know, Christie said he's tried to call Boehner four times, and Boehner refuses to call him back. For what? How can he not take care of that? And if you're wondering why this seems to be such a big deal, it is. That's why this so-called fiscal cliff legislation had to be done right now. Everything had to be done prior to midnight tonight. Because as of Thursday, the new congressional members get sworn in. Once they get sworn in, the whole process of this legislation has to start from square one. Once they're sworn in, the whole process has to start over. That's why they had to get it done tonight, because they didn't want to have to restart the process. And that's where the Republicans really failed in the House. The Republicans in the House should have never passed this. 24 hours before the new congressional people come in? Are you kidding me? As a Republican, if I was a true conservative, I can promise you, I would not want my last act in office right now to be that I violated every principle and every ethical obligation I had to the oath of my party to raise taxes on the American people and expect to ever run for office again or expect anybody to take me seriously in any credible way for the rest of my life. And that's what these clowns did. And you know, I know I offend some people. Sorry, Paul, because I always call, you know, John Boehner Boner. That's why I call him Boner. It was a boneheaded move to make. It was a spineless move to make. And yet he made it. So we've got a lot here, folks. you know, that we've just really got to start paying attention to, you know. Last night I touched a little bit on the so-called congressional pay raise. Everybody is screaming, well, Congress got their pay raise, and they're raising our taxes to pay themselves. Folks, not everything is as it seems. And I know there's a lot of media people out there that love to try to put that myth out there and make it a big deal. And yes, there's a lot of independent news sources that do that as well. I apologize for that. I'm part of that independent network. We're one of the largest independent networks of news sources coming out of Louisville, Kentucky. Here's the deal. Under a 1989 law, Congress members, your lawmakers, are supposed to receive automatic cost of living pay hikes. But in recent years, as Congress's approval rating continued to decline into the single digits, if you will, you know, congressional leaders have actually made it a routine habit to reject the raise. They haven't been taking the pay raise. It's mandated by law, but what they do is they just change things around and amend it so that they don't get a raise this year. Now, you would think this is the one area where I can actually respect both sides of the aisle. They're not doing it because they're really concerned. These guys make $174,000 a year, folks. Their pay raise this year, their cost of living, would have amounted to about $900. When you're making $175,000 a year, you're going to turn down a $900 pay increase, especially when the average tax increase you're putting on each and every American out there in the workforce is almost double that. It's common sense not to do that. You don't want to start anything crazy. You're not going to be able to finish, okay? But what's here that nobody really knows about is that Congress, attached to this bill, this spending bill, this fiscal cliff bill, was a provision that they would reject the raise and they wouldn't take the raise. Now, this is where it really gets comical, because the only reason they're in that position is because of Barack Obama. Here, I know. Here he goes again. He's picking on the president. Why is he going to always blame it on the president? Well, I tell you why I've got to blame it on the president. Because Congress had already taken a vote back in September that would block their pay raise through at least March the 27th so that they could work this budget deal out. So they had already addressed the issue of the pay raise and refused to accept it. So how is this Barack Obama's fault? Because Barack Obama issued an executive order just 2 weeks ago to implement the congressional pay raise. They had already declined the raise. So Obama says, you know what? I need a little bit of political favor. I need the mainstream media to jump on board and give me a hand with this. So I've got to screw the American people and lie to them and tell them that Congress just got a pay raise, but I've got to give enough of a bait and switch there for mainstream media to run with it. And that's exactly what he did. Congress had already said no to a pay raise in September that was going to extend all the way through March 27th. And Barack Obama said, well, you're going to take this pay raise whether you want it or not. So he issued an executive order that forced it. It also gave a mandatory pay increase for federal workers. You think Barack Obama cares about this economy? Do you think he cares about the American worker? According to Barack Obama and the liberal left, we had to do this. If we didn't take action now and raise this $620 billion, we were going back into recession. The economy was going to tank. We're in all kinds of trouble. But I'll go ahead and force Congress to take a pay raise so I can make them look bad and get my way. But I have a hard time understanding how Barack Obama thinks that, you know, he's going to be able to get away with this hard sell, if you will, that he's going to be able to get away with this. You know, the first thing Barack Obama did after the vote last night, he made his little speech in the White House briefing room. He jumped on Air Force One and flew to Hawaii at a cost of over $3 million to you and me. And that's a conservative estimate. That doesn't count all the other equipment, planes, personnel, everything else that has to travel with him. That's just based on $180,000 an hour for flight time only, and the round trip is estimated at 18 hours. Do the math. Do the math. You think he cared? Oh, I doubt it. Even as we speak, the economists were out there saying that this stuff really wasn't going to matter a whole lot. Everybody was scared that the economy was going to tank. But this deal that was just struck in Congress doesn't do us any good at all. It's still going to hurt economic growth. So everybody bought into the lie. Depending on who you listen to on the economy, we're still going to have a problem with economic growth. The hit to our growth is going to be something around 1.3 to 1.75%. That's just the early estimates. They haven't even done the deep stuff yet. Now, when you're talking about an economy that's expected to run around 2.3% GDP growth next year, what does that tell you? Does anybody in their right mind think that this made any significant difference at all? None. The only thing that's going to fix us is spending cuts, spending control. Take in more than you put out. That will fix it. That will fix it. We've got a $1.6 trillion debt this year. $620 billion is not going to touch that. It's still new debt. Cut the $1 trillion. Do it now. But they're not going to do it. Is that alarming to you yet? I don't know. But I tell you what is alarming to me is Obama acted like he wanted to do everybody this great favor by raising his threshold for the Bush-era tax cuts from $250,000 for a married couple to $450,000 for a married couple. If you make $450,000 and below, you got to keep your Bush-era tax cut. Now, as I've mentioned before many times, the median household income in America for Americans is about $50,000 a year. The threshold is nine times what the majority people in America make. So in short, nobody's really going to touch that $450,000. At $250,000 that Obama kept screaming he wanted and he was going to get, we had a lot of people that were going to be involved in that. But most of them are going to be people like your congressional leaders and, oh, by the way, your president himself. Does Michelle Obama have a job? She doesn't make an income. How much money does the president of the United States make a year, folks? $450,000? That was pretty quick. I'm proud of you. That's right. So this deal protects Barack Obama from his personal income taxes as well. Because everything else is investment income and is taxed different anyway. So the personal income for the president, the personal incomes for the Congress have just been saved from new taxes. Because the majority of those people make $450,000. Now I ask you, what is wrong with us today? What is wrong with us today? Are we so blind that we can't see that? Or are we just that stupid? That's where I have a problem. That's where I have a problem. And, you know, so we're going to sit here. We're going to sit here. We're going to continue going down this road. And I'm going to continue ranting about it for another few minutes. I want to make you guys aware. I want you to hear this one more time. This is one of the things that we open the show with these days. I want you to listen to this.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
You want me to give you guys 30 seconds to do that? Because I don't think many people would. But that's what we need to do. We need to get angry. We need to stand up and we need to say we're not going to take this anymore. We have got to get fired up. We have got to take control of America back, of the people, by the people, and for the people. And you can't do it when you're sitting on your butts, bitching, moaning, groaning, and complaining, and not getting involved in the process of fixing it. Let's go to the phones. Mayo.
Hey, Ed. Going back, because I was too young to be a Reaganite, but, I mean, just after reading some of the things.
Don't give me that shit. I know you. Go ahead.
But one thing Reagan said, you know, that made America different was every other country had a piece of paper that told the people what the government was going to do to them to control them, whereas the United States had a piece of paper which told the government what they can't do to the people or what the people could do to the government. I'm paraphrasing here. And it's like, you know, with what you're saying, if people do get angry enough or involved enough or, you know, make calls or send that, I mean, don't send an email, send an actual letter. So there's something physical, you know.
Well, send it registered mail. I want
to
make sure everybody understands this. Send a registered mail now because they got to sign for it, but you need to send it now because next week when you get your first check with the new taxes, you're not going to be able to afford the dollar it's going to cost you to send it. Go ahead, mail.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like you're saying, you know, the first time I heard it, I mean, you can go all the way back to Pelosi's, the ACA thing. You know, you have to pass the bill so you can see what's in it. Well, that was malarkey against everything in Congress. Yeah. But, you know, like, oh, you can spend your way out of debt. That's like trying to say you can shovel yourself out of a hole. I mean, are you, you know, dig yourself deeper?
Very true. Very true.
You know, I just, why people don't get more upset or ticked off or whatever, because it does, you know, directly affect them. Congress, like with what you're saying with their pay raise, you know, cost of living increase, whatever it was voted in every year.
Mm-hmm.
How come that's not for the rest of the American public? There are only 10 states, which I think yesterday Washington is one of those 10, has the highest minimum wage. They have a cost of living increase. They started it 5 or 10 years ago. And, in, you know, the minimum wage in Washington is $9.19, Washington State. And there's 9 other states which go along with that, and I think the lowest one of those is like $7.55 or $7.65. Why are the other 40 states stuck at 7.25?
Well, for me personally, I don't like the idea of a minimum wage. I never have. I understand the theory behind it, but a minimum wage is nothing to me but pure socialism. We continue wondering why businesses, when you look at corporate CEOs and stuff, at one point in this country, you know, going back all the way to the 50s and during World War II and coming out in the 50s of Korea and stuff, you know, the disparity between the CEOs and the mainstream line workers was not very much. Your CEOs were making
like
three to four. Well, it was 3 to 4 to 1 at one point. When it reached 20 to 1, people got concerned. But we started passing laws. We started raising this minimum wage. We started doing all these other things, you know. And the more we got involved, the more we decided to regulate and govern, the more expensive goods became. And it gave these guys saying, "Hey, you know what? If I've got to pay this guy $3 an hour because the government says I have to, I'm not going to suck that up." So he started raising the cost of his goods or his service, whatever he is selling is making money, and he found a way to go ahead and raise that even more. So if you're going to tell an employer, if me and you walk into the same employer, Mayo, and we both got identical resumes, okay?
Right.
We work side by side for a year. With a minimum wage law in place, that employer is going to pay us both the same no matter what. Where is my incentive to do better? Now, if he hires us both at say, $3 an hour, if he hires us both to say $3 an hour, and then over that next year, I'm outperforming you 2 to 1, or you're outperforming me 2 to 1, I'll make you the good guy, okay? You're busting your butt. You're working twice as hard as I am. I'm just a lazy little crap doing the bare minimum to get by. And he goes up and he doubles your salary or decides he wants to give you a 30 or 40% pay raise to reward you for your hard work. You've earned that raise, haven't you?
Yeah, that's the way
he's got
be.
That. He's got that opportunity. Right. But what minimum wage did,
but the
did,
numbers
though,
are so skewed now, like your CEO thing, it's like 252 or 257 to 1. What was it, 7 years ago or something like that? I think the first time my brother got laid off at Ford, mm-hmm. and in the business section, Ford hires new business manager, $500 or $5 million bonus, and I called my brother. I said, "Did this guy make a new engine?" Did he create a new car? Did he? And he goes, no, they're like the quarterbacks. I said, and he, what has he done? How is he saving you money? How many workers could they have kept working with $5 million bonus?
Well, they didn't care. They didn't care. You know, the way the corporate runs, in that particular example, though, you got Ford here. You know, Ford made 2 million vehicles last year. Second year in a row, they're the only one that's done it. Okay? So they go out and they make 2 million vehicles a year. All right? Now, they're going to make 2 million vehicles a year every year. Let's just assume that's normal. Okay? But as the cost of goods goes up, you've got two choices. You can raise the cost of your product, in this case your vehicle, or you can find a way to cut cost so that you can remain competitive. And that's the thing. And see, that's what most people forget. This CEO or this business guy that they hired gave him a $5 million bonus. The first thing he did was find out how many employees he could cut to make that $5 million bonus and still get the job
done. Yeah, the early retirement deal.
Sure, and still get the job done. He had to pay himself his bonus. They don't care if they got to put, you know, 500 or 1,000 people out of work. They're going to get their $5 million, and Ford's still going to produce 2 million vehicles. They'll just do it with 500 less people. That's nothing to them. That doesn't matter. I got mine. Forget about yours. And stop it. Our good friend Paul Hall in the chat room.
They're calling.
Go ahead.
Well, with the new union hires, I mean, I'm like what they call the super TPT. I've been at it Ford like 5-6 times now. And I think I was up to 20-something dollars an hour as a TPT because I'd learned like 19 jobs, and you got a quarter more an hour for every job you learn.
Right.
And but the new union now, instead of starting at the old rate of like 17 or 19, the new guys start 13 or 15.
Well, actually, you're getting confused with GE now. They do have a two-tier wage system. When I started at Ford back in 1999, you know, I started at 15 and some change an hour. That's what the new hires are starting at today. The difference is we had a pay scale so that at the end of 3 years or at the end of the contract term, I was going to be making top pay that everybody else was making. Okay, so by the time I left there, I was making over $20 an hour. The difference with the new hires today is
so this noise don't bug you.
Okay, you're fine. The difference today is the difference today, folks, is that the new hires no longer automatically get these pay increases until they reach top pay in 2 or 3 years. They're stuck at a different level for pay increases until Ford maxes out at 20% new hires. Once Ford has 20% of the people at the lower pay scale, then some of those people get moved up to the higher pay scale because Ford has got a contractual agreement to keep no more than 20% of the people at the lower pay scale. So that's what works out today. And what's interesting about that, though, is, and, you know, we're in overdrive, folks. Wasn't planned, but we're going to stick around for about 5 or 10 more minutes, but I want to get this out there because this is very important. What's interesting about that scenario is that's what minimum wage does to you, and that's what guaranteed wage does to you. Because if you go out to Ford, you go out to GE, or you go out to any other company that has all these guaranteed out, you know, guaranteed wages, regardless of how much work you do, you're going to see a real work disparity in some cases. You're going to see that intentional. Ford actually has some jobs out there that, you know, people are like, well, he shouldn't get paid because he don't do nothing. He's doing the job that Ford hired him to do. I have no animosity against that employee. But Ford does that kind of stuff intentionally to create a division between the employees. Now, when you want to talk to the union, I got news for you. There was nothing I hate worse than busting my butt next to a guy who's lazy and don't want to work. I can't stand it. If I'm out there busting my butt and doing more than what's required of me and taking pride in my job and working myself to the bone to make sure that my product is a quality product and that this employer is getting an honest day's work for an honest day's pay, it drives me nuts when I see some lazy guys next to me sitting around griping when they're standing around twiddling their fingers all day and they're griping because they got too much work to do when they're not doing anything in the first place, making the same money. That's what pisses me off. And Paul, our good friend, stop it in the chat room. You know, he brings up a point. If the market is so good here that employers can pay and the socialists up there feel good, then more power to them. But if $9 an hour is mandated because it's fair for minimum wage, then why doesn't Washington State make the minimum wage $15 an hour? Isn't that more fair? Actually, Paul, I think you bring up an excellent point here, and this is why. Because the cost of living and the standard of living throughout each state is completely different. This is one of the biggest arguments that I have always had with the federal government and a so-called minimum wage laws. You cannot regulate a minimum pay across the board for everybody. It just doesn't work that way. I personally could not afford to live in California on what my household income is. Most people can't. I could not uproot and move to California. The cost of living is just too high. When I could buy a house here for $100,000 to $150,000, that's the same size that I can buy in California, but it's going to cost me $450,000 or $500,000 for the same house. How do you afford that? On a $40,000 or $50,000 a year income, I certainly can't afford that on a minimum wage income. And that's the reality. And, you know, when you get up into Washington, D.C., for example, D.C. has got one of the highest cost of living across this whole nation. The whole state does. So for me, what I would rather see is for each state to have the flexibility to take it upon themselves. If everybody wants to have a minimum wage, so be it. But let the state determine what that minimum wage will be. And I'll tell you something else that's going to do for you. It's going to promote a hell of a lot of jobs. It's going to promote a hell of a lot of free market competition. Because when an employer decides he wants to daggone open up a business, the first thing he's going to look at, and it's the same thing in any real estate transaction, and Paul, you will say the same thing, location, location, location. If an employer can come to Kentucky and their cost of living allows them to have a labor force and their minimum wage is $5 an hour, or he can go to California to produce the same damn thing, but he has to pay this employee $10 or $12 an hour, it's a no-brainer he's going to go to Kentucky. Going to create a bunch of jobs in Kentucky. So you're going to create competition between the states that way as well. And to me, that's very relevant. To me, that's very relevant. We consistently talk about states' rights, but the states have been so busy giving up their rights, hoping the federal government will take care of them, just like they try to have the federal government take care of everybody. The states are just as much of a daggone welfare whore as any other person is. That's just the way it is. They want Big Brother to take care of them on a state level. They want to go to the feds for everything because they don't want to take responsibility for themselves. Put this power back on the states. Let's see how long your liberals last in your state positions like Beshear and Abramson here in Kentucky. Mayo, you're on. Be quick. We're running out of time.
You brought up California. I can't remember the exact number, but out of all of social services, California uses one-third of the whole U.S.'s social service money.
Sure.
Welfare, you know, et cetera. So,
sure.
I mean, there's so many people. I mean, why is California, why is Hollywood always now, if you notice all the new movies, past 3 years, if not longer, they're filming in Canada, Bosnia, Serbia, Yugoslavia, you know, instead of filming in Hollywood. Why?
Oh, I can tell you why.
Send everybody there and do it cheaper.
Well, I can tell you why, because 7 of the top 10 richest Congress members, that includes the House and the Senate, are Democrats. And in the top 5 is Nancy Pelosi. You need to hear more? Where's Dianne Feinstein from? Where's Nancy Pelosi from? Okay? California is the brokest state in the union. They are hundreds of billions of dollars in debt and will never see the light of day. They take one-third of all the daggone federal tax money. All right? But you ought to see what they do with the local tax money. It's pathetic. I have often said, and I will repeat it once again because I firmly believe it, I wish it would happen tomorrow, but I cannot wait until California finally breaks off from the continental United States and sinks in the ocean. And on the day that it does, I hope that it takes every liberal, ultra-left liberal down with it. Put them out in that ocean, let them sink or swim. They'll learn a lot about personal responsibility then, won't they? I'm not saying I want them dead. Don't want to get that argument started. But let them sink or swim when California finally just drops in the ocean. The earthquakes are going to make that crack just bigger. And I want to be there with film when I see all these people swimming back to shore. Oh, I'll have a couple of boats handy. The ones who are really working at it, trying to save everything, or the ones who are going to be hard workers, I'm going to bring them in. But those boats can only hold so many people. You know, so you know, there's all kinds of ways to look at this. But, yeah, they're fair points. When we talk about minimum wage, when we talk about states, when we talk about the drain on the economy. And, you know, this fiscal cliff was just the hardest thing in the world, man. So much drama over something we knew was going to happen anyway. I tell you, that's it for tonight, folks. Mayo, thank you so much for the call. I certainly appreciate it. Paul, thanks
great
for your comments. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Paul, thanks for your comments in the chat room. I love the information you feed me from time to time because it saves me all kinds of trouble. For all you guys that have been listening, I appreciate it. If you guys are going to listen to our future podcasts, remember to make us one of your regular listens on Stitcher.com. You can listen to us on Stitcher Radio, iTunes. If it's out there, we're on it. I promise you. And don't forget to check out LouisvillePolitics.com for a podcast of this show and every other show that we do and all the latest news. It's really important to talk about. In the meantime, folks, have a great night. It's a pleasure being with you. Tomorrow night, Dale the Truth will be back here at 7 o'clock for his TNT Thursday Night Truth show. Tune in. It's the first show of the year. Dale's at a Liberty meeting tonight as the keynote speaker. I promise you he'll be fired up. Tune in tomorrow night at 7 for that. And don't forget Kim Ullman on Sunday night at 7 o'clock with his Liberty Unbridled show. In the meantime, have a great night. We'll just leave you with this.
Hey, everybody. Gather around. I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government.